STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hello there. This is Stand to Reason, STR Ask podcast, hashtag STR Ask. I'm Melinda the Enforcer, and I'm here with Greg Kokel, our answerer.
Howdy, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
So this is a short podcast. You send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STR Ask, and then Greg has 4 minutes or less to answer the questions. Why are you looking at that? Like, it's unbelievable that you could do this?
No, I just, there you are.
I know, because we're filming this, we have to sit closer.
It's like, I know. It's like,
there you are, right
there. She just said just before we went on, get away from me. So,
all right. Can't get too far.
So, there she is.
That's what happens when we want to film this.
Yeah.
Okay, but we'll survive for 40 minutes.
You're kind of in the shadow a little bit. We want to see your full glory there.
Blast this in my face.
All right, there you go.
So, okay. So send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRask, and then I ask Greg the questions, and he's on a timer. So here we go.
Rock and roll.
First question comes from Twitter, my plumber Tim. Demon possession seemed ubiquitous in Jesus' day. Is it less prevalent now due to a fixed amount of demons but a larger population? I thought that was an interesting point of view. Observation.
Yeah, well, there do seem to be a fixed amount of demons. No new demons being made, I guess. The law population is growing, but that would only really be a factor if there weren't that many demons to go around, for one, and then you had to kind of divvy them up sparingly among the population. I don't know how many demons there are. Nobody does. I don't know that that's the explanation. I also don't think that demon possession was ubiquitous back then. That means kind of all over the place. There were encounters a lot with demon-possessed people that Jesus had, and we read about those a number of times in the Gospels, and it says he was casting out all who were demon-possessed. So there seemed to be... it's certainly more than what we kind of appear to see around us now. I don't know why that's the case. Some have suggested that there was more demon possession then because Jesus was around. And so there was more of an activity of Satan to oppose the rescuer. But, I mean, a lot of this is just simply speculation. We can't know for sure. But... I think
it's because of the shortage of demons these days.
No, I don't think there's a shortage of demons, but I do think it's there doesn't seem to be much demon possession in the West, but in other countries, third world countries, there seems to be more of it. Not because there's more activity there than here; it's just the activity manifests itself differently. The devil is just as hard at work here as he is anywhere else, but because Westerners tend to be more sophisticated about these kinds of things, they don't believe in Satan. You know, he's the guy with red tights and a pitchfork and horns and hooves and all that. That's farcical to them, and so they don't pay attention to it. I remember a song by Keith Green. That was something to the effect of nobody believes in the devil anymore, so he can just walk through the front door. But of course, he doesn't walk around drawing a lot of attention to himself. He's free to play, so to speak, because people don't believe in him. If there was a dramatic display of spiritual demonic activity, well, that would upset people's worldview apple carts, and so consequently, he finds it better just to do that in areas of the world where people believe in that kind of thing. So again, that's speculation, but I think there's a sensibility to that. I think there's plenty of demonic activity in other places, the kind that we overt, like demon possession. But the kind we see now is a different type of demonic activity.
Okay.
I think there's plenty of demons to go around.
Rats. All right, the next question comes from the mortal fool. Have you ever heard a pastor say something egregiously bad at a church you were visiting? And if so, how did you respond?
Well, I do remember in Florida.
Stand up, raise your hand. I'm Greg Kokel.
That's right.
I'm here to explain to you.
Yeah. I've never done that.
Thank goodness.
Let me just think.
That'd be bad manners.
It would be bad manners, although.
And I doubt it would do much good doing it that way.
Well, I wouldn't. It wouldn't do any good with the preacher, probably, but it might do good for the people listening. And I'm trying to. I can't foreclose on that possibility as a legitimate possibility, though I don't think I've ever done it. I do remember one time when I was in a church in Florida. This is many, many years ago, two or three decades ago, where the preacher was just doing a number on the church to get money, and it was kind of a word faith kind of type of appeal, like you give to me and I'll give to you kind of thing, or God will give to you. And it was so abusive. It was so excessive. It was so manipulative. I got up in the middle of the service kind of, I think a little bit dramatically. I just got up in a huff and I just walked out, shook my head in disgust. And that's what I did. I didn't make any statements or whatever. I do remember I was just thinking of this the other day too, ironically. I was at UCLA in 1973 when I became a Christian, and at UCLA they had an open-air preaching area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they still have that. They certainly wouldn't let our type probably do that. In any event, that presumes free speech.
Like 15 years ago you got invited over there?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Open-air preaching.
Well, it was
zone.
Open-air preaching, but it wasn't an open-air preaching area there. It
no,
was just
it was
like walk out in there and start yelling, you know.
But
which,
it was, I think, the area of the
was
walk,
awful.
Bruin walk that.
Yeah, it was along Bruin Walk. That's right. And the free speech, the so-called free speech area was there along Bruin Walk. Again, I don't know if it's still there. But there was some radical guy.
You don't know if Bruin Walk's there or you don't know
no,
if free
No, I don't
speech
remember
if
there. The walk, I'm sure, is there. But
I'm
the
not
free
sure
speech
free
area.
Free speech is there anymore either.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. But I there was a guy preaching against the gospel and really viciously and I was standing there with other Christians, and I couldn't let it stand. I couldn't let it lie, I should say. And I really had to muster up my courage to do this. But I got up, and I stood in front of his podium, and I started speaking to the audience against what he had to say. And I don't know that what I said was very clever or anything like that. But I had to bear testimony to the truth in the face of this blasphemy, basically. I wasn't abusive to the person, but I was interrupting them. But it was a free speech area, after all. You know.
These were the days when your nickname was Dudamus, right?
Yeah, that's
Dynamite.
Right. But it was also, so there was some other things maybe
this
going on there.
Maybe a little habitual.
But it was also a part of the times, you know, so it wasn't right. So much out of place for me to do that.
That's what hippies did.
But I do remember that the person who had been speaking got completely flummoxed, couldn't complete a sentence kind of deal. I just wanted to get belt out, you know, 60 seconds, a minute and a half of something in opposition to what he was saying. Again, I don't know that it was clever or anything, but I wanted to give the truth up against the lie. And so there was a case where I just stood up in the crowd and let him have it.
Well, there's a situation where, I mean, it was sort of this public open air thing. And so but let's talk about, there have been times I know that you've been invited to under, you know, the banner of Stand to Reason, you've been invited to speak at a church and somebody else up on the teaching or saying something, you've disagreed.
Yeah.
And so what have you done?
Well, I would, first of all, I'm not going to get invited to teach at a church that is completely 180 degrees different from us theologically.
Just 27 degrees.
There's going to be times, and obviously every church, people are going to disagree on particular things.
Yeah, I disagree with you.
And that's right. Even among our group here, you disagree every time you can get away with it. but So my approach in a situation like that is to try to be hospitable. I'm a guest at somebody else's house, and I'm not going to make a big fuss unless I'm invited to take exception with it, you know. But I'm not going to go against the pastor just to make a point. In fact, I try to avoid the more controversial issues if I can. So let's say I'm in a Q&A and young earth creationism comes up and somebody's gunning for me and maybe it's a young earth church. Well, I'm not going to go and create a big deal because I don't think it's that important and I don't want to get in the way of other things that I'm trying to accomplish there. So I usually will just let that one lie. I'll just pass on it or say, I don't know. I don't think it'll be productive to pursue that. I do remember one time, I won't give any details except for it was a Q&A time, and the pastor was sitting on the stool right next to me. And I think the issue of sovereign grace and election came up, and I don't know that I even engaged it. The pastor was dismissive about it. He just said, the pastor took over at that point, and here's what he said. He said, well, the way I look at it is God casts his vote, the devil casts his vote, and we break the tie. That was his answer. So that just, okay, next kind of thing. But I'm thinking to myself, so that's the place. But I didn't know the devil got a vote, first of all. And secondly, I didn't know the devil's vote was just as strong as God's vote.
So it had to be broken.
Yeah, so anyway,
well,
I just...
So one of our speakers was telling us just recently, because he was troubled by this, he was invited to speak at an event. We won't say who or where this was.
Right.
And one of the other people invited to speak, I think, was teaching Word Faith. I think that's what it was. Huh. But it was something that was, do you remember? This is like a month ago.
Vaguely.
We talked about the staff meeting.
Yeah.
And so he was asking
us.
We
have staff meetings?
Yes.
I don't remember
that far back. He was
asking
us, like, how he should have handled it. And I think what he had ended up doing was going and talking to the leadership who had invited him,
right,
and expressed his concerns and gave his reasons, mm-hmm, and, you know, suggested that, you know, this person not be invited back to speak in the future.
Right.
And that also perhaps, you know, he'd be happy. I think he had a relationship with this group and that, you know, he'd be happy to help screen potential, mm-hmm, speakers.
Right.
But that was, I mean, he was in a kind of a tough, uncomfortable situation,
right,
here.
Right.
Heresy being taught.
Yeah, I remember something similar came up, not that we were involved with directly, but somebody else that I knew, at a camp situation where a guest speaker was really off base. And he ended up talking to the leadership of the camp.
That's
and then,
what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's the one you're talking about? Okay. And, well, yeah, okay. It wasn't Word Faith, but it was another problem.
Oh, okay. I can't remember
but
exactly.
That's why I got confused about it. But he talked to the leadership of the church, of the camp, and they were sympathetic to what he had to say because the other person was really off base. But when he sent an email, a generous email, and this isn't somebody on our staff that I'm talking about who sent this email, somebody else. And the person did not respond well at all. And his response was, I've been doing ministry for 10 years, you know, and you know, who are you to tell me what's right? It's a terrible attitude, not teachable in any way. And, of course, I'm thinking the response is when the person says, well, I've been doing this for 10 years, the response is, well, you've been doing it wrong for 10 years, you know. But all you can do is what this brother did, which I think is in a very fine spirit, address both the leadership and the individual, and then you just let it lie and see, let them take care of it themselves. The leadership was responsive, but the individual who is a problem here wasn't responsive in the least.
No, it's up to the leadership to not let that person teach.
Pardon me?
Then it's up to that leadership to
Correct.
Not let that person teach.
Correct.
Okay, last question comes from Vincent Hamanick. Is there ever a point that it's okay to use violence to spread the gospel?
Well, my immediate natural impulse would be to say no. But
yes,
no.
And I'm wondering why you're hesitating.
Well, no, I'm just, because I'm trying to be careful. I'm just thinking, can I think of a counterexample where, well, I guess the way the question is put, use violence to spread the gospel, the answer would be no. Because now, in the spreading of the gospel, can I think of circumstances where I might be justified in using violence? And that's a different kind of question. I mean, just let's just say that I was in a situation where, I don't know, I mean, it's hard to speculate on these. I was in another country and my family was with me and we were being attacked as Christians by foes. Would I think it appropriate to use resistance, even to the point of violence, to protect them?
Then.
Yeah, and so
seems obvious. You can defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. And Paul fled violence many times. You know, fled persecution.
But would you go on the offensive?
No. The simple answer to that question is no.
Yeah, I figured that's all it was. It was a simple answer.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to infer anything from my silence, except for I wanted to be careful to think.
You just wanted to see what the possibilities
were.
You
know, the obvious answer is obvious, it seems, but all right, wait a minute. Maybe this person asked the question. It has something in mind, and I'm trying to think, might there be an exception, but I couldn't think of one.
Well, and there's never a case in the Bible where, in the New Testament, where the violence is used to spread the gospel.
No.
And actually, in the Old Testament, there's never a time where violence is used to include others in the people of God.
Right.
Yeah. And,
the Old Testament accounts of violence.
Given the gospel, the fact that it's a conviction we have in the life we live, it has to be voluntary.
You can force somebody to confess Allah and do those kinds of things, but you can't force anyone to believe. And it's a methodology that's not even appropriate to the task. I don't mean morally appropriate. I mean functionally appropriate. It's not morally appropriate either. But there wouldn't be any sense to it because violence can't cause someone to believe.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause somebody to live as if they did believe, but that's not what we're after.
But that doesn't save them.
That's correct.
So it's pointless.
Good point.
Thank you. All right. I'll just answer it next time.
there's another question?
No. I was just surprised at your hesitation. But you're a careful thinker, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this episode. You can send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRAsk, the name of the podcast, and we post new episodes every Mondays and Thursdays. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kolkel for Stand to Reason.
Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.